We bring this question before you today on The Balanced Word.
Ask yourself, as I ask myself, what are you willing to die for? What is it that if you are in a situation that you would say, I am willing to give my life for that? I mean, there are a lot of people who would say, yep, if the time came and somebody said, you know, deny your faith in Jesus, nope, I believe in Jesus to the death. And the same people sometimes who say that are like, they don't say anything about Jesus to somebody because they're afraid they'll be laughed at. I think we fool ourselves into thinking sometimes that we have an integrity that we don't necessarily have. But what would you die for?
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
So how would you answer that question, friend? What would you die for? What in life is that important to you? Today on The Balanced Word, we'll meet up with three guys who were willing to take a stand for the Lord in the face of a fiery furnace. They were willing to say, I'm going to do what's right no matter what happens as a result. We'll be encouraged to share that same integrity as we travel through life. With that said, there are some hills we should be willing to die on, and some that are not that important. How do we know the difference? Let's look into that now, as we turn to Daniel chapter 3 and join Pastor Dave Rolf.
Now let's turn in our Bibles to Daniel chapter 3, the third chapter of Daniel. As you know, we're moving through the Old Testament this year and picking up key Bible stories along the way. Just great, great stories of things that have happened and seeing what lessons God has for us in these stories. Daniel chapter 3 is it's got to be one of the favorite Bible stories. We'll be in Daniel for several weeks because it has such great stories. But this is the story of the three guys that got thrown into the fire. The Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego got tossed in the fiery furnace. You've probably heard the story when you were a kid in Sunday school. It's just one of those great, inspiring stories. But let's take a look at it. What had happened, just to give you some background, as you probably know, at this point, the children of Israel had been taken captive by the Babylonians and Nebuchadnezzar in 586 BC. And Daniel and some of the best and the brightest of the Jews had been taken captive first. And they were being trained for special jobs that they would play in the government. Nebuchadnezzar realized there are gifted people in other countries, and I want them to be working with us. I want to train them and prepare them because I'm taking over the world. And so Daniel and his three friends, Hananiah and Azariah and Mishael, who their names were changed to Babylonian names. Daniel was called Belteshazzar, which means keeper of the secrets of Baal. And then the other guys were named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so in chapter 1, they had had this experience where they got permission to eat health food because it made them healthier. They negotiated that. And then in chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar had had a dream where he was so puzzled by it, he wanted the interpretation, but he knew that the magicians and everything that he had were a bunch of con men. So he said, I'm not even going to tell you what the dream is. But you tell me what my dream was, and then you tell me what the interpretation is. And so none of them could do it, but Daniel came forward and he goes, I'll do it. Now he would die for sure if he guessed wrong, but he knew that he could do it because he knew God could do it. And so he revealed the dream and the interpretation. It was the dream involved a big statue that, you know, its head was made of gold and had arms and a torso that were composed of different metals down to the feet. And he made it clear these are a succession of kingdoms. And he was actually predicting that as the head of gold was the Babylonian Empire, that it would be succeeded by a dual empire, the two arms, which were the Medes and the Persians working together. Then this strong torso that spoke of the Greek Empire that would follow that. Finally, the Roman Empire, would be the legs after that. And then the feet were related to the Roman Empire, but these 10 toes involved 10 kingdoms. That is probably a reference to a kingdom that has yet to come, that will exist in the future when Messiah comes back and returns in the second coming. So he lays that out, and Nebuchadnezzar was blown away. And as a result, he promoted not only Daniel, he made Daniel like his right-hand guy, but then also Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who were his buddies, he put them in important positions within the government. And so that brings us to chapter 3. What happens in chapter 3? Nebuchadnezzar was thinking about this statue, and he's like, I'm the head of gold. That's really cool. So he comes up with an idea of building a 90-foot statue, probably gold-plated, but 90 feet, it was a big thing. And it was a statue of him. And it was like his way of saying, I'm not just the head of gold, I'm the whole thing. I'm the deal. This is all about me. And so what he did after he built it, he wanted to celebrate and dedicate it. And so he took all of the government, the important government officials, and called them and invited them to this special celebration of dedication. And he had a band there, and he said, when the band plays, bow down to this statue. And anybody who won't do it gets killed. We're going to throw you in the furnace that's been melting gold down to make the statue. And so the band played, people bowed down. And, in chapter 3, you can see in verse 8, after these guys didn't bow down, it says in Daniel 3, verse 8, therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. Chaldeans were Babylonians. They were really jealous because a Jewish guy was now their boss, Daniel. And then these other guys got special treatment, and they were important. So when they saw that they didn't bow down, they went and ratted them out to Nebuchadnezzar and said, you made this decree and these guys didn't do it. They haven't bowed down. Verse 12, there are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. See, it's like, these are guys you hired. These are your boys. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they don't serve your gods. They don't worship the gold image which you've set up. And so they get told on. There were probably enough people there that it wasn't that noticeable that three guys are just kind of standing there. So these guys told on them. And it made Nebuchadnezzar really mad. You can see in verse 13, Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and fury, said, get those guys in here. It's like, I've promoted them, now they're making me look bad. Now my own people are complaining about them. Get them in here, I'm going to deal with this. And so as you read on in the chapter, he told them, look guys, you cannot defy me. I'm getting pressure from my people because you're making me look bad by you not doing this. So ordinarily, you'd just be dead. But I'll tell you what, you look like nice guys. You've been, you're friends of Daniel's and everything. So I'll give you one more chance. The band will play again, an encore. And when they do, bow down to this image and all is forgiven. But if you don't bow down, I am going to throw you into this furnace of fire and you'll be killed. And he said, what God is there who's going to save you from fire? A real challenging thing. And their response was kind of interesting. They said to him, there down there in verse 16, Nebuchadnezzar, you don't need to strike up the band again. Don't even bother asking. Because if it's the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand one way or the other. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we serve the gold image which you have set up. They said, you're asking what kind of a God could save us? Hey, the God we serve can save us. We believe that he could. We hope that he will. But even if he doesn't, And if you throw us in there and we just incinerate, we're still not going to bow down to your idol. For a king who's so powerful to have that kind of response was just like, what do I do? You're making me look bad. You're shaming me in front of everyone. And so he was so mad. He said, turn the fire up 7 times hotter. Now, it's not like if the fire is hotter, you're going to be more dead. I mean, if anything, if you turn the fire down, it might make it a little prolong the agony, but he's just mad. So you think you're a big man, you think you're all powerful, and somebody stands up to you, it absolutely shatters your confidence. People who act like, oh, I'm in charge, I'm so tough. Man, when somebody stands up to them in the simplest way, you see how insecure they are, and that's Nebuchadnezzar. And so he did it. It was so hot that when the guys who, they tied up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego with ropes, hands and feet, and the guys who had to go throw them in the furnace actually burned to death getting them into the furnace because he had made it so hot. So I don't know if they kicked them in too or what, but they're in the fire. And now Nebuchadnezzar is thinking, I showed you. Anybody else not want to bow down? Then he looked in the fire and he calls some guys to him and he goes, wait, there was just 3 guys, right? They go, yep, 3 guys tied up. He said, how come there's 4 guys walking around in there? They aren't tied up. They're not bound. There's 4 instead of 3, and the 4th one looks like a son of the gods. I believe it probably was the son of God, but he saw him at least as well. He looked like an angel. He's kind of shiny, looked different. And so he asked this question, and everybody's like, I don't know, man. They were sure tied up, and that's real fire. And you're right, they're walking around in there. And so he went as close as he could get to the furnace, maybe turned the fire down a bit at that point. And he called in and he said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out of the fire. It's like he's trying to give them permission. Okay, I hope you've learned your lesson. Why don't you come out? If I was them, I would have gone, why don't you just come in and get us? We're fine. But they came out. And amazingly, they didn't even smell like smoke. Their hair wasn't burned. There was like no sign that they had even been in a fire. If you go down to the beach and stand around a bonfire for a while, you come home and your clothes reek and your hair. And sometimes as a kid, when I made bombs, I would always had the hair on my arms. And my eyebrows were all singed and everything. They came out and they were totally fine. And he's like, oh, okay. And then he says, well, tell you what. Now, nobody better mess with the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Anyone who says anything bad about them is going to get thrown into a fire. He looks so stupid that he does this flip-flop, and then he promoted them. Now they're even in a more important position. It's a cool story. It really is. It's really the last we hear of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in this book. But you can't help but admire their courage, their conviction, their faith in God, and the fact that God delivered them is just really cool. So we look at it, and it's a story that kind of inspires us. It's a story that we think, boy, there's a lot of lessons here that we can learn from this. But what is it that we really take away from this? See, most of us are probably never going to be in a position where it's like, here's a decision that you have to make. And if you make the wrong decision, you're going to be killed. So you say you believe in God. You say you are a follower of Jesus Christ. If you don't take that back, you will die right now. Most of us are not going to be in that position. Now, there are people in other parts of the world, as we speak, who are in that position. You deny Christ and you convert to Islam, or you will be crucified, your head will be cut off. That's a reality in our day and age. But for most of us, that's probably not going to happen. It's just That's not where we live. Things could change for us. And I think many of us are just scared to death if anyone would ever do that. I think if I'm there and they're going, you're going to die if you don't bow down, I'll be thinking, hey, it might just happen right when the music plays that I realize, oh, my shoe's untied. And I can just kneel down and tie my shoe and nobody knows. I mean, I can think of all sorts of creative ways to get out of this. For some reason, they didn't do that. They just stood up with integrity and took a stand. And we admire that, but what does that look like for us? And all of these things, every story in the Bible is here for our example. It's here to teach us things. That's what the scripture tells us. One of the things that I see from this that I think of is for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, this didn't just happen in a vacuum. They already had some experience. They already had a history. They had been there in chapter 1 when they were ordered to eat the king's junk food. You know, what they thought was really special food, but it was really just not that good for them. But, you know, in that case, they made a deal. And they ate their vegetables, and everybody else ate their filet mignon and their Krispy Kremes and everything. And they ended up being healthier than the other guys, and it worked out really well. So they had already seen God work in that kind of a way when they negotiated their way out of it. And so that strengthened them, and they got promoted as a result. Then in chapter 2, they saw God use Daniel in such a crazy way where he knew what this dream was, he knew what it meant, and now they all got promoted more. So now you drop yourself into this situation. These guys had some history. They weren't in a vacuum. And I think for all of us, it helps as we make life decisions that we look back and think about, when I did what was right, how did that work out for me? Other people that I have observed who really had integrity, how did God work in their lives? So did that become a good thing in their life? And so if we strengthen ourselves with memories of commitments that we've made and the ways in which God came through for us, it helps us face a situation like this where it's like, uh-oh, I actually have something to lose here. I actually have something that I am afraid of here. Now, we all want to be people of integrity. We all want to be real. We all want to be those who practice what we preach, who know what we believe and actually follow it and make those tough decisions. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are examples of people who sometimes you just have to draw a line. Sometimes you have to decide, this is a hill that I am willing to die on. Now, there are probably very few things in our lives that are life and death. But there's something that I think we should think about a little bit, because the whole world isn't in our position, but also this involves integrity at the depths of your being. Ask yourself, as I ask myself, what are you willing to die for? What is it that if you are in a situation that you would say, I am willing to give my life for that? I mean, there are a lot of people who would say, yep, if the time came and somebody said, you know, deny your faith in Jesus, nope, I believe in Jesus to the death. And the same people sometimes who say that are like, they don't say anything about Jesus to somebody because they're afraid they'll be laughed at. I think we fool ourselves into thinking sometimes that we have an integrity that we don't necessarily have. But what would you die for? There are some people who want to die, and they'll die for almost anything. There are a whole lot of people in this world who die for absolutely nothing, and we're all going to die. So we might as well think in terms of, what is more valuable to me than my life? Maybe you'll say, it's my family. Or maybe you'll just pick certain members of your family. Maybe it's my integrity. Maybe it is, you know, whatever you can think of to say, I would die for it. It's interesting. I don't think there are very many people who say, I would die for fast food. But people are dying for fast food every day by eating the stuff that's literally killing them. But sometimes we just don't go through that process to figure it out. we're going to die. What are you going to die for? Now, these guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, did not draw lines everywhere. There are some people who think everything they believe is life and death. And it's like, I'm going to take a stand for Jesus on this matter. Now, there are some people who just, you know, everything is a stance. Like, if they won't let me wear my cross at work, I quit. I'm going to be like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They won't let me put a Bible on my desk. Or they, you know, there are pastors who are scared to death that if they will take away our tax-exempt status, if we don't do this or conform in that. These guys didn't draw lines everywhere. They weren't nuts. You know, when there was a problem with the diet, they negotiated. They worked out. They go, hey, look, what do you really want? You really want us to be healthy, right? So how about this? When their godly Hebrew names were taken away from them and they were given pagan Babylonian names, they weren't freaked out by that. They're like, hey, fine, call us whatever you want. But when they got to this point, there was something about this time and this place that they just knew, this is the time when I take my stand. It's dangerous to think you have integrity because you won't compromise anywhere. But real integrity has to decide, where will I take my stand? One of the questions that I wrote for the home fellowships this week, and you can start thinking about it now if you're in a home fellowship. If you're not in a home fellowship, A, you should be, and B, don't you dare answer this question on your own. You're not allowed to. No, I'm just kidding. But one of the questions is, what would you die for? What is it that's that important to you? Because these guys knew this is the moment. Now, I can't tell you what your moment is. I can't tell you what hill you should die on or what line you will not cross. It might be different for everyone. God has to kind of lead you and give you that sensitivity to it. Maybe there was a way they could have negotiated their way out of this or called Daniel and had him go to bat for them. But for some reason, they just knew at this point, nope, this is just over the line. We're not going to do it.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolf is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. With these concluding thoughts, here again is Pastor Dave.
I think for all of us, we have to at least think, okay, where would I not compromise? It can't be on everything. Where would I decide this is one I have to put my foot down? I'm willing to die for this. And as we consider it, one of the things that we learn from these guys is you cannot decide what integrity is based on what you are afraid might happen to you depending on what you do. They were not anticipating that, oh, this is going to hurt. Boy, and we would tend to think sometimes, if I knew that God was going to deliver me from the fire, I don't mind going through the fire at all. But how do I know? It might destroy me, and yes, it might. And so the faith that these guys had to say, God is able to deliver us. If he doesn't deliver us, it's not because he isn't able. It's going to be because he has a reason for why he is going to do this. But you know what? If we die in the fire, we're still not going to bow down. So can we live our lives in such a way that we say, I'm going to do what's right, no matter what happens as a result of it? And ultimately, that's what the Christian life, that's what integrity is about.
Discovering balanced living through the Word of God, this has been The Balanced Word with Dave Raw. We'll have another great Bible story for you next time. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. Online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And